This podcast is brought to you by thewarhq.co.uk, the online shop that's run by Bolt Action Players, for Bolt Action Players, and to celebrate the sponsorship of this podcast, we are giving you a code for 20% off at the shop and post and packaging for free. So use the code POD21, that's POD21. Now, on with the show, and at the end, go to thewarhq.co.uk. Hello, everybody. It's Paul here at the War Room, and thewarhq.co.uk are sponsoring us, as you heard. And today, it's the Friday episode going up to the club tonight. As some of you will know, I've just started actual work on the Dutch Army that I have been challenged to play with, for want of a better word. We're going to go into the history of the Battle of the Netherlands at a later stage and go into some of the ins and outs. It didn't last terribly long, about 5 days, but interesting nonetheless, and some surprising stuff about the Dutch that us here in the UK probably know nothing about. In fact, many places won't know anything about, although the Dutch are quite well acquainted with their World War II history, as we've found out recently. There is a company that sells the Dutch models. It's May 14 miniatures, and a couple of Dutch websites with a couple of hundred guys on, not websites, Facebook sites with a couple of hundred guys on there who are all willing to give advice if anybody else is interested in setting foot into the ocean that is the Dutch army. But I've been, as I say, challenged to play the Battle of Netherlands list, which doesn't give you an awful lot. As far as infantry, you've got two choices. One is an infantry section you can take as regular, or you can have an inexperienced infantry section. And those are your infantry units as such. We get the machine gun, anti-tank, mortar. You can only take the mortar as a medium mortar. You don't have any other choices. You do get a sniper, and I do believe that historically the Dutch didn't use snipers as such. They had marksmen in squads, so guys that were designated marksmen. You do have a reduced but fairly good range of artillery, going from light anti-tank, light medium heavy artillery, and a Bofors autocannon. Is that 40mm as a heavy autocannon? Can't remember, let me just have a quick check. Bofors, yep, it's a heavy autocannon. You have some TOWs, which are all unarmed, I think. Yep. To get your heavy artillery and your artillery range, you have a choice of one armoured car, which is the Landsverk armoured car. And you have one tank, which is the Carden Lloyd tankette. And for those who don't know, it is basically a Bren carrier with a medium machine gun instead of a light machine gun. It's probably the Carden Lloyd tankette was probably the early version Bren carrier, to be honest. And then you can take transports. We've only got light trucks or cars, neither of which you can arm. And we also get Captain Major, we get the Medic, and a Forward Artillery Observer, and the usual 1st, 2nd Lieutenant, which we can't take as veteran. And that's it. It's a very concise list. I would think at 1250 points, I might be struggling to actually play a single platoon with the points that are up for grabs there. I think you're almost forced into playing two platoons at 1250 points, but we're going to play 1,000 points against Graham tonight. Up here in Scotland, we have ramped back down to 1,000 points being the norm. A lot of the guys getting ready for the World Team Championships, so 1,000 points at the moment. The list that I'm going to go with, well, I've got two lists. One has a captain in it and one doesn't have a captain in it, and I'm toying between, do we play with a captain or do we not? So if we play with the captain, we have a second lieutenant who's inexperienced. The captain is regular with a partner to try and make him a little bit harder to kill if possible. If we're playing without the captain, we go to a first lieutenant and we make him regular. But And if we go without the captain, we get an extra free infantry squad. I think instead of the full 11-man squad, it's a 10-man squad without an LMG. But apart from that, the lists are pretty much the same. So the core of it is made up with three inexperienced infantry sections, full 11-man squads with an LMG, and that gives us access to the free inexperienced infantry squad, made up as the lowest pointed inexperienced infantry squad. So in this case, we're going to have four of the same, because why would you do anything different? And that gives us four 11-man squads with light machine guns. The free infantry obviously gives us a wee extra dice. We're going to use an anti-tank rifle. I think I've costed that in at veteran. The smaller units, I'm trying to make them harder to kill with a sniper if possible. So I've made them up to veteran. So I've got the anti-tank rifle team, I've got medium mortar team, and I have a sniper. So this is sort of the more competitive list. If I'm playing historically, I won't put the sniper in. And then artillery wise, we have a heavy howitzer and a medium howitzer. Those are basically going to be our anti-tank, really, hoping to pin tanks out rather than kill them. We've got a Trado tractor to cart that heavy artillery piece about. We've got the Landsberg armoured car, which is a pretty neat little armoured car, similar to the BA-20, I think it is. So it has two medium machine guns, one forward firing, one rear firing. It has a coaxial light anti-tank gun with a medium machine gun. So quite a few shots. It also has recce, so usual recce conditions we're going to try with that. And I've put in the Carden Lloyd tankette. It's more or less the same cost as the machine gun team, but I get to move it. It is armoured, so it's probably a slightly better choice than taking a machine gun team. And that should bring us to 15 dice altogether. Oh, sorry. In this list, I've got the captain and I've got a medic as well. Medic, I thought, cheap dice, because really we want to try and keep the dice advantage if we can with this army. So we're trying not to lose dice if we can, and we're trying to be able to get that artillery firing and the sniper team, mortar team, anti-tank rifle team, trying to get them firing first to weaken any firing that's going to come back at us and maybe start reducing the dice on the opposition side. So we'll see how that works out. As I say, I'm playing Graham. He's playing an LRDG list with the new rules out of the Western Desert book, of all things. So that'll be interesting. Some new rules for us to get our heads around. And yes, I'm going to go with that list. I've got another list, as I said, that doesn't have the captain in it. But we're going to go with that list today. We'll see how it works, or indeed how it doesn't work. Playing against it's essentially a recce army with those jeeps, and they have like an extra kind of recce rule, which I haven't read up on. It's probably going to be more a case of going in to ambush with a lot of things, because they can't recce from an ambush, I don't think. Maybe find out different when I've learnt the new rules. So looking forward to playing them. There's going to be a lot of proxies. I'm probably going to have a go at taping the game tonight just to see how it goes along, but there's going to be, as I say, an awful lot of unpainted and an awful lot of proxied models in it, and we'll see how all that comes out. We've got to start learning how to play this Dutch list. It's going to take it down to the doubles competition at the Guns Over the River Blythe in the end of January, I think it is. I'm also going to be taking it down to Warlord GT and see how it gets on there. Hopefully I'll have learnt how to play it by then. This is a totally different army for me. I don't usually play with inexperienced troops, and just wondering whether the captain is worth it, or whether it's worth, or whether you're as well running the first lieutenant and saving the points. But we shall see how that gets on. what else has been happening in my world? Well, I was reading up about the Battle of Kursk, which was an interesting one, and listened to a podcast about it, and I didn't realise in actual fact that it was the Germans that launched the offensive. I don't know much about it, so yeah, you know, I'm ignorant, what the heck. But the battle took place in 1943, 5th of July to the 23rd of August. And Soviets obviously having defeated and weakened the Germans at the Battle of Stalingrad in the winter previous to that. The idea was the Germans were starting another offensive really to eliminate the Red Army at Kursk and prevent the Russians from launching any more offensive, which would allow Hitler to concentrate on the Western Front. However, Soviets knew where the attack was going to take place. The intelligence services provided extensive information on the likely attack, and the Russians had plenty of time to build up the network of fortifications, and it was to wait for this big German offensive. So they got to choose the ground, and of course it turned out to be one of the biggest tank battles in history. It was estimated there were as many as 6,000 tanks, 4,000 aircraft, and up to 2 million men involved in the battle. I mean, numbers do vary depending on who you're listening to, but it was a huge, huge thing. The major clash of armour took place at a place I can't pronounce, Prokhorovka. We'll try that. On the 12th of July, when the Red Army actually attacked the Wehrmacht, approximately 500 tanks attacked the 11th SS Panzer Corps. And the Soviets suffered heavy losses. This is a recurring theme with the Soviets, as we see, but nonetheless, they prevailed. And it's thought that the Battle of Brody, which was fought in 1941, in actual fact, was a bigger tank battle than that particular one. But the main thing with the Germans is they had extremely powerful tanks, obviously the Tiger, the Panther, the Ferdinand, and they believed that this would give them a big victory. But Kursk demonstrated that these tanks, although high in kill ratio, couldn't destroy other tanks when they had bigger numbers set against them, basically. The Soviets didn't really have the power to counter them, so they started with numbers, mainly. So the Soviets had sort of roughly double the number of tanks that the Germans did, although they knew they didn't have the technology or probably the firepower to protect themselves. They focused on creating more tanks, and so they would have a larger force. They also, because they knew the battlefield at Kursk, one of the things they did to help with this is they actually dug in tanks at Kursk. This would give them much better protection from firepower, and the idea was that the Germans wouldn't be able to see them and would get into much closer range. So the long-range guns of the Germans, that advantage would be negated. And in close one-on-one battles, the Soviets thought they had just as much chance as the Germans, and it seemed to, in general, prove true. The battlefield, obviously, as I was saying, gave them a major advantage. Kursk is known for its black earth and produces big, big dust clouds. And basically, these dust clouds hindered the Luftwaffe and prevented them from providing air support to the soldiers on the ground. The Soviet forces didn't face that problem, as they were stationary, and it allowed them to attack with less difficulty, and they weren't really hindered by the poor visibility underneath the clouds. And so, while the Germans had a much bigger force, they suffered unsustainable losses. So, while the Russians were able to reinforce, the Germans couldn't reinforce at the right places as well or as easily, and the attack ran out of steam basically after about 8 days. It was basically the turning point of the Eastern Front, and I think most people would agree. Hitler received the news the Allies had invaded Sicily. He decided to cancel the operation and he divided his forces down into Italy. They didn't mount another counter-attack on the Eastern Front again, in actual fact, and they never really were victorious against the Soviet forces after that. The Soviets began their counter-offensive afterwards and started to advance into Europe, and as we all know, they ended up capturing Berlin in May 1945. And that, as they say, is the rest is history. So, would be quite interesting to fight Kursk battles in bolt action using the Tank Wars rules. Make something a wee bit more different. The dug-in tanks, it would be quite good. Attacker on defender, seeing if you could get those big forces, the big tanks, the big cats of the Germans up into a medium tank army of Soviet tanks that are dug in and see who would come out on top. Of course, a lot of the Germans, the big cats that they sent, weren't actually, they'd been sent up before they were properly finished in the factory, some of them. And as we know, whilst it was great engineering, the reliability of the German armour was somewhat suspect, and again, that didn't help their chances. So, thinking a lot about the Battle of Kursk, I'm just starting to turn my mind towards the Battle of the Netherlands, which was in 1940, so pretty early war. And maybe next week we'll do a wee bit more on that. But I think that's it for just now. On Monday, we can probably hear the results of my battle against Graham and the Long Range Desert Force. And we will keep you updated if you need to contact us. You can all the usual places. You can either go on to Podomatic, where this podcast is housed, and leave messages there. You can find us on Facebook at the War HQ.co.uk. You can find us on YouTube at thewarhq.co.uk. So please send us comments, let us know what sort of things you would like to hear in podcasts, and we will try and come up with the content that you guys like to hear. So mahalo for now, and talk to you all soon. So you listen to the show. Now it's time to visit thewarhq.co.uk for all your bolt action needs. And remember to use the code POD21, that's POD21, to get 20% off and free postage and packaging. See you in the next show.